With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. This is the George Christensen Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, welcome back to the final hour of the George Christensen Show here on TNT Radio. We've talked about a lot of different issues today, obviously rural Australia and their ongoing plight, particularly when it comes to the extreme green machine and its attacks on farming families. We've talked about speaking for freedom, and over the course of the next hour, we're going to be talking about peace. I'm going to be talking with Susie Evans, who I've known for some time. What I didn't know, actually, is Susie's a nutritional biochemist, a health coach, and a motivational speaker. But her background academically includes master's degree courses in teaching gifted children and also high school teaching in the sciences for many, many years. She did postgraduate research in the fields of diabetes, cancer, and other lifestyle-related diseases. And over the last 30 years, she's worked very diligently and passionately in the fields of interfaith and intercultural dialogue. Currently, she's working with her husband, Steve, as the state leaders in Queensland of the Religious Freedom Alliance and the founders of the Institute of Faith and Culture. She's also a senior advisor for the Universal Peace Federation of Queensland. Her experience and passions include promoting positive relationship dynamics in family and community and in the environment. She works closely with her husband, Steve, as we said before, on projects that promote peace, promote world peace. She's initiated and developed, along with Steve, the Domestic Peace Series, the latest being the Music for Peace event, which we'll talk about in a very short while. But Susie, I didn't know the health background. How are you going there?
Yes, that is a passion of mine, the health and nutritional and well-being. I think that's basically the fundamental or the foundation of our lives, because many times I'll ask people, or kids particularly, I'll ask them, what is it that if you lose it or you don't have it, that all your dreams and aspirations won't come to fruition? And most people shrug their heads. They don't have an idea, the kids particularly. And I'll say, well, what about your health, whether it's physical, emotional, spiritual, or otherwise? If you lose that, then how can you go on to those things that you really want to achieve in life? So that's been a passion of mine since I was in my early 20s. Well, actually, teenage years.
Yeah. Well, look, I have to ask, and I know this wasn't in the little conference and powwow we did beforehand where we worked out what we were going to talk about. But as someone that has that background, what has your take been on the whole aftermath of the great experiment that we went through with COVID-19, and particularly the mRNA gene therapy that was rolled out and injections that were almost forced upon people, because there's been a lot of conjecture and evidence, not just conjecture, but evidence as well, about a rise in excess deaths, a rise in cancers, this sort of thing. Do you have an opinion looking at it from a professional point of view?
Yes, I do. I think I was awakened to a lot of these issues back in my early 20s. I had a passion for finding solutions to prevent or to cure such things as diabetes and cancer. And I happened to work in some prestigious institutions down in Victoria. And I worked under some of the very best professors in those areas. But unfortunately, even in my early 20s, I noticed that there were things being done, papers being published without peer review and not being verified. And I asked, what is going on here? Why are you doing this? And they said, well, we've got to publish first because we won't get the research grants and we won't get the accolades. So that gave me already in my early 20s, I was in shock at that point. It actually made me quite sick. It woke me up to the fact that medicine and the way they were dealing with medicine wasn't really in the best interests of people. So when this came around, And not just this, but other things previously, I realized there was something not quite right in this whole situation. I've not really believed in, put it this way, artificial medicines augmenting our systems at all, particularly our immune system. I've not believed that the I believe that the immune system is created by God to do a certain job. And I think that the way we've interfered with it, not just in this time, but in previous times, isn't the best way for us to get the autoimmune, the immune system to work at its best capacity by any means, putting it in a mild way.
Well, I fully agree with you on that, Susie. But look, as I said, I didn't want the conversation to go down the COVID-19 rabbit hole. I wanted to talk about peace. Now, there's a lot of people who would not know what the Universal Peace Federation is all about, or United Peace Federation. Could you give the person listening a bit of an outline about what this organization is about? Because I think that there is this desire across much of mankind at the moment for peace, because we see constantly conflict going on, whether it's conflict at home or conflict politically, a conflict in our households, but particularly on a global stage, you've got conflict between nations. It just seems to be escalating, and no one wanting to actually promote peace, to actually calm things down. Instead, there seems to be this want to throw fuel on the fire. So what is this Peace Federation all about?
Well, the Universal Peace Federation was founded by Father and Mother Moon, and it was founded as a pillar of society to be kind of like what we'd call an able United Nations. Back in the when it was formed in 2005, Father Moon said that the United Nations is not really fulfilling the job it was supposed to be, to make sure that nations were not fighting amongst each other, that despots didn't rise up and hurt their own people, etc. And he said that they're not fulfilling their task, so we need to create another tier to the United Nations, which is one that is more spiritual and holds them accountable and responsible. And so it's kind of like the king and the priest. In the past, the priest would be asked to give the king advice. Mm-hmm. And so this would have been the spiritual tier to do that. And now under the Universal Peace Federation, we have a number of pillars to include professors, World Peace Academy, sciences, educational arenas. And this particular one that I'm going to be talking about is the pillar of the IAACP, which is the International Association for Arts and Culture and Peace. And that's how we did the particular event with Music for Peace, which was stemming out of the original domestic peace series that we did to counter the violence we see in the home. Mm-hmm. So I think one of the main tenets of the teachings that I understand from UPF and in general is that peace needs to start from within us first. Mm. And we can see in each of us, there's kind of a part of us that wants to do good, and then there's a kind of a part that wants to sort of not do so much good. And there's a war going on within us. And so first, I think we need to address, if we want to do anything with peace building elsewhere, we've got to make sure that there's peace inside of us first, or at least we're working towards that.
Yeah. Now, you referred to Moon. You're talking about the Reverend Sam Young Moon, no doubt the Korean religious leader. He started up the Unification Church. But aside from the religious side of things for Moon, he was virulently pro-peace, virulently anti-communist. He's very passionate about that, and very passionate about the importance of family life, wasn't he?
Indeed. There were two major things. He said that God had three headaches at the time. This was back in the 80s when communism was on the rise in a military way in South America, etc. And he said that God's got three great headaches. First one was communism. Second one was the decline of the family and morality in general amongst our youth. And those obviously went together, the family breakdown and the demise of our morality and our culture. So these were very important points, and we can see them being revisited again on a much higher level.
I think God's going to need the ibuprofen, because the headaches are coming back in modern day and age. Sadly, it's sort of perennial issues. Let's go on to the kind of work that you're doing here in Australia through the UPF. You talk about the domestic peace series that you've been involved with. What is it? What is the domestic peace series? Just for those who are completely uninitiated, have no clue, what is this program?
Okay. So firstly, I think we've been witnessing several pandemics that are even prior to this, interesting pandemic that they've called at this time. I'd say that there are pandemics that are much more important that we should have addressed in the past, and that is the pandemic of domestic violence within family breakdown. And the other one was to do also with the pandemic of non-communicable diseases, NCDs, which have actually created the vulnerabilities that have allowed the governments to push these kinds of medicines on us, because people have felt so vulnerable. So getting back now to this domestic peace series that we inaugurated. It was inaugurated in Steve and I. We produced it and directed it ourselves, volunteer basically, because we saw that from current statistics of domestic violence, the historical symptomatic relief actions were not enough to solve the issues. Mm-hmm. So what were we missing? It's kind of like, when you talk about the increase of cancers and diabetes, well, what are we missing? We're throwing all this money into research for it, but it's not really getting any better. It's getting worse. So what do we need to look at? So then, because I'd studied health and coaching, I wanted to sort of deal with it in a more coach-like manner, because the way that we're dealing with things currently, because we're facing so many challenges, it's a full court press, really, that's happening to us at the moment here in Australia and worldwide, is how are we going to counter that? It seems to me that the way we've typically dealt with things is to become reactionary and to become, we don't become hostile, but I think we get angry, righteously angry. And we've got to be careful that not only do we not fall into the trap of getting fearful or upset and angry and worried about the fact that other people aren't waking up, but how can we become solution-oriented? What can we do to focus more on the possibilities and ideals of what we wish to achieve, rather than expending too much energy in fighting or running away from whatever is happening? So we want to take on a whole new perspective, a new positive approach.
Well, and I think that's something, Susie, that's definitely warranted. And I'm actually glad that you've referred to it as domestic violence. That term, sadly, in policy circles has become a bit passé. Instead, they use the term now family violence. And I think there's very political and specific reasons for that. The more that they can link the term violence with family, the more it puts a pejorative on the former being a way of life that you would be attracted to. And in fact, this is one of the of course I've got to say that someone going home and bashing their spouse is an evil thing. It doesn't even need to be said. Sometimes I do worry, though, that we are drawing the bow far too long when it comes to domestic violence. I mean, you even hear from some of the advocates within the domestic violence industry that sort of suggest that getting cross about someone having spent too much is a form of domestic violence. I think that's nonsense myself, to be quite honest. I think it actually demeans and cheapens the term violence. So the reason I wonder why people would seek to cheapen and demean the term violence. And all I come up with is the idea that perhaps there's people who use family violence, as they call it, to undermine the institution of the family. They want to turn everything
absolutely
into family violence rather than actually focusing on actual violence. So I think that you're right that we do need to look at the whole issue from a different perspective. Does this go into your thinking or no?
Yes, it absolutely parallels my thinking, because I think the narrative today is to talk about the family's not necessary because of the things that are going on in the family. The family's broken, kids are coming out of it, being abused, etc. But then there's a reason why the family is in demise, and we have to get back to the root cause of this, because actually the family, I think it was originally created by our creator or God or whatever you want to call, as an institution that would perpetuate love, that would raise up children of goodness and value. And that's why is that being undermined? So this whole thing that you're talking about using, trying to denigrate the family, saying, oh, we don't want families, the government should take over because our kids are being abused there. I think that is being used. And I think I want to take it in a different way and say, hey, what are the pillars of society that have actually contributed to the demise of the family?
And let's have a quick talk about that, Susie, after this quick break here on TNT Radio's The George Christensen Show.
TNT Radio's Lynn Shaw.
We have to have this family emergency plan. It is very simple. Right now, with our children also having access to so much online, remember, kids 9 to 17 have access to 4 devices, phones, laptops, Chromebooks, computers, gaming consoles, you know, you name it. They've got access to it. 4 devices. They see everything. That's why you have to talk to them, because they're seeing it anyway. So the information, the facts, the truths must come from you. We want to share facts, not fears. So with kids seeing all of this, with the adults being horrified, and there are no words for tragedies like in Hawaii, talk to your kids. You know, form a plan. Have a meeting place if you're all separated, if possible. You know, think ahead of time. Pack a bag. We hear that a lot. Yet when I ask people, they don't do it. Have an emergency bag packed with medications, with extra water, with a change of clothes for warm and for cold. I know. I've had people say to me, that's ridiculous. We are seeing emergencies play out in front of us. Why not be extra careful?
Lynn Shaw on TNT Radio.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
This is the George Christensen Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the George Christensen Show here on TNT Radio. We're going to be talking about everything peace for the remainder of the hour with Susie Evans, who's from the Universal Peace Federation. Susie, we're talking about domestic violence before the break, and how you believe there needs to be a fresh look at our approach to domestic violence and the solutions that we come up with, because the current approach, as I suggested, is one that almost seeks to demonize the family. How do you see the approach that's needed?
Okay. Well, I think firstly, let's think about the word violence, as you said. The constant use of domestic violence is the perpetuation of violence. That's why we chose to use domestic peace, because that's what we want to create. And it also affects the biochemistry of the body, creating a sense of flight or fright or that. And so when you use conversely the word peace, it tends to promote a relaxation response and you can think more clearly. So in coaching, the way we work, whether it's now on, I'm calling the domestic peace series now, and I'm calling out the fact that we're now working not just on a family level, we're working on a world level, because the world globe is our domicile, and we're witnessing a sense of domestic violence on the global level, which I'll come back to later.
Mm.
And so ultimately, we're usually motivated to work towards something more positive and move away from the negative, as I mentioned. And it's really important that we note that from a life coaching perspective, in order to arrive at a dynamic of a place of peace, we need to have a clear understanding of where we're at and what is our ultimate destination. Like if you're in the mall and you want to go to David Jones, you've got to know where you're at. And then design the dynamic of how to get there. It's the same thing with our lives. We've got to admit, and even the state of our current affairs, whether it's in the family or on a global level, we've got to admit to where we're at. We can't put our head in the sand. We need to actually talk about what's going on, but not stay focused in that area. Stay focused on what it is we want to build. What is it that we want to build? And I think it's really important to understand, you know, when we're talking about totalitarian or fascist regimes and what they're building, that it's we need to understand that the end is inherent in the means. So if, as you're saying, with regard to what's going on with the forcible medical things or other things, the end is inherent in the means. So if the means is violent or the means is coercive and controlling, that's going to be the end. That won't be the real utopia. So that's important to understand, I think. And
if I could just jump in there, Susie.
An atmosphere of respect, patience, empathy, and acknowledgement, that we're more likely to achieve the very love and peace we're looking for. So I guess what I'd like to sort of emphasize right now is that during the period of the lockdowns, et cetera, and all the other things that they did to kind of coerce us, there was a heightened anxiety and increases of substance abuse and emotional instability, suicide attempts, just to name a few. And people were actually seeking help. Women and children who are the most vulnerable there were being disproportionately affected by domestic violence during these times. And it's particularly tragic for the case of women because they're the very ones who are imbued with the qualities of nurturing and dialoguing and peacemaking skills. So they're a key to the recovery process. And so they absolutely need the support of all aspects of society to release and empower them. And then we can achieve this by highlighting their divine feminine qualities that can work in concert with men who also have come to understand that they need to understand the masculine essence. So that's what we're dealing with today, is there's such confused ideas about what is the role of masculine, the feminine, therefore the rise of all this crazy gender bending, I believe. And so I think that with any disease, in order to prevent to cure, we have to analyze the root causes and identify the pillars of society that have seemingly played a significant role in allowing the continued inappropriate and often, I'd say, violent behavior towards women and children. And these pillars of society, I know I'm going on a bit, but I know that I don't have a lot of time, but these pillars of society that have actually influenced the family to be in demise and having these issues are to include the religious, cultural, education, media spheres, and those things need to be addressed because they've helped cause the demise. So then why we had the domestic peace series is we brought on guests such as Tom McDevitt, who's the CEO of the Washington Times, that you met on a Zoom call together with us a few years ago. And he was addressing, together with Cheryl Wetstein, who is also a writer for the Washington Times, is how the media can become more involved in telling the truth and being honest in true journalism.
Yeah.
Right? And so there are other areas that I think are really important. The faith-based institutions, they're not standing up at this time, whether it's the churches, the mosques, synagogues. They need to speak up when they witness immorality seeping into the culture, and they're not doing that. I'm sure, George, you're familiar with Eric Metaxas.
I am indeed. Yes.
He's a wonderful writer and really very prescient. And he's written books, one of them called Bonhoeffer, where he parallels what happened then in the 30s with the churches being silent during the time Hitler came to power
mm-hmm.
and the time now. with the Christian churches and other faith-based institutions being also in silence. And they're fearful, they want to belong, they're scared of all sorts of issues from the government. And so it was a warning. And I'm particularly interested in that warning because my parents are survivors of the Holocaust, and they actually told me the playbook of what took place. So that's why I'm aware of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. There seems to be, Susie,
yes,
what you've basically articulated there, but it seems to be this root causes of family breakdown are almost coordinated. They're almost orchestrated, lots of people would say. And
yes,
that's incredibly worrying. I think that we can actually see evidence that this idea of breaking down the family is something that is more of an agenda, actually, than a lot of people would like to admit. If we go to Scotland, a number of years ago, the Scottish National Party, which is a left-wing government that was run by then Nicola Sturgeon as the chief minister or first minister in Scotland,
yeah,
they proposed setting up what they called an Office of the Child's Guardian. And
yes,
what was going to happen is that every single child across Scotland was going to be appointed a particular guardian, a government acknowledged or a government authorised guardian that would be able to, I guess, countermand decisions from their mum and dads. So this was the state directly intruding itself into the relationship between parents and kids. And I think when you look at the reason why the family might be undermined by all of these different institutions that you've rattled off there, why there is this push in the modern world to ensure family breakdown, it is because of that. Because if they can destroy the nexus between parent and child, then instead of having an institution where values, traditional values have been instilled in the next generation, the government can then instill values in the next generation. It can be the values of the governing class, the values of the globalist elite, the values that we know are just going to be woke and left-wing. So I think there's something in that, and all of these pressures that come on the family, I wonder whether a lot of it is orchestrated to that end. What do you think?
I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think I put it down. Look, this is a spiritual battle I think we're facing. I said biblically, you know, we're going to be fighting battles in spiritual high places. We can, I think Father Moon said that we may try to seek political and social solutions, but the reality is it becomes down to God and our God. So where are the institutions that God has basically planted here? And that is the family. It's supposed to be the school of love, the place where values, godly values and ethics, etc., and purpose is given to the children. And the issue, I think, is that if you look at any of the Marxist or totalitarian regimes, one of the first places they seem to go is to break the family structure, to break the bond between a mother and a child, to break, if you look at it, a lot of the problems with domestic violence come from the fact that kids don't have a father figure.
Yes.
So these are all orchestrated attempts, I believe, by whether it's Marxist, totalitarian, global elite, to take God out of our culture. And once we take God out of the culture, we take morality out, and then the governments and other organizations say, well, the family's not doing its job, so we're going to take over. And then all these issues with regard to gay marriage, etc., that's going on. I mean, we love our gay brothers and sisters. I mean, they have every right to love and to exist. But once they took the marriage identification, and then that's the institution, God's institution. And then they basically made a new terminology. And so as soon as you do that, you start to see the morals and values going out of a society and the slippery slope. When you redefine marriage, then what's not to stop you from redefining, you know, something, what is a man?
What is a man or what is a woman, indeed. Well, that's what's happening right now, Susie. Right. I mean, I'm probably with you. I have no issue about anyone's sexuality, but as soon as you start foisting this onto kids, and as soon as you start trying to force upon the rest of us the denial of what quite clearly is reality, just straight biological reality, then you've really entered a bit of a danger zone. But Susie, what I mean, with all of these pressures coming to bear by Australian families throughout the Western world and beyond, what is it that you think that can be done by families to, I guess, create some form of resilience to these attacks, to create some form of strength that's going to ensure peace and love flow throughout that family unit?
Right. Well, I think that's a really important question, George, because we need to understand how to what's the counter-proposal of creating a strong family. And there's a lovely book that we've got from, she's a spiritual practicing, she's a coach and practical guide to marriage. And she's got a book called Out Small Steps to Bigger Love. And so I think that if we understand that a lot of the problems we face in the family, which is extended out to culture, is the fact that we don't know how to communicate properly. There's all sorts of confusion, interpretations, and then there's conflict. So the question now is, comes down to communication. So how do we communicate in a way that has a dynamic of peace in it? And that would be respectful, empathic communication and creating those kinds of relationships. And so we can see it even between myself and my husband. There are times, you know, when you get into a conflictual situation and you have to wait for a moment where you can actually talk it through and come to a conclusion. So I think the bottom premise of creating peace is really learning good communication skills and understanding that it is not the selfishness and self-servedness that will bring happiness, but it is in service to others that we actually bring peace and happiness, and looking at the other person and saying, how can I bring happiness to them? Because then I bring happiness to myself as well.
So I want to pick at that a bit and unravel it for the practical application of it. So you mentioned that yourself and your husband, Steve, there's been some conflictual situations which every married couple has probably gotten themselves into. How does one pull back from that conflictual situation and the conflictual style of conversation that's going on? Mm-hmm. What does it practically look like, Susie?
Okay, that's also important to note. I think what we're learning is that at the time when there's the heated conversation going on and one may be blaming the other, it just escalates. So I think one needs to come to a point where we're not really getting anywhere through this. Can we take a time out and revisit the situation when we've calmed down, and then, you know, do something that will calm you down, whether you go for a walk in the park or you read something or you dance or you sing? Find something that takes you away from that situation. So when you come to revisit it, and you both need to come to an agreement, yes, let's revisit this together and let's listen to each other and let's find a way that it's a win-win for both of us. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Fairly practical sort of advice there. Mm-hmm. It seems so common sense almost that we wonder why we allow violence to enter into relationships. It should be about anything but violence. And of course, we've talked about all of the pressures that are coming on families, but is there a reason beyond poor communication, you think, that leads to violence within what should be loving relationships?
That's a deep question. I think that since the Garden of Eden, if you want to go back that far, because it's been a problem since way back. I mean, there's been a conflictual situation between Adam and Eve, yeah. And all of a sudden we see, you know, Cain killing Abel. And so there are other religious organizations that have similar stories. So it's a time-old thing. It's gone historically back. And I think we need to understand historically what is the root cause of that conflict. Why is it? Well, put it this way, is I think that because God has gone out of the equation in a lot of situations, in whether it's marriages or our cultural institutions, then we're looking from our own perspective at things. And
which
I think
is a fallen
it's
perspective.
That we start to look from a more holistic, higher perspective. And like, for instance, I'll give an example. It's a pretty poignant example of, like, a friend of mine told me that it was in a New York subway. He said this vagrant came and spat on him. And then he was repulsed by it. And he said, well, look, you know, I don't like this. And then he prayed about it and he got an answer that, well, I have been present since the moment this child was born, from a baby, a poor innocent baby, and I've seen all the issues impinge on him to create this final end product. You're only seeing the whole end product, but I'm seeing everything. And so I have compassion. And so if we can take ourselves to a point where we can try to put ourselves in the shoes of another person and what they've gone through and really understand them, then maybe it's possible that with that empathy and that patience and understanding, that we have a new perspective and that we can have that kind of compassionate love of a parent. Because that's the kind of thing in a marriage relationship. There are times when we're a husband and wife. There is a time when, you know, my husband may be like a father to me or mother to him. There may be times when we're like brother and sister. So it's revolving. So I think the highest level of understanding and bringing peace would be to take a parental perspective.
Mm-hmm, indeed. We'll be back with more about how we can make peace flourish in our communities, sure. In our lives, in our homes, after this quick break here on TNT Radio's The George Christensen Show.
Patrick Henningsen on TNT Radio.
They're trying to say that COVID cases are up. They're running the same playbook again for Europe, for the United States, and Asia. The COVID cases are up. There's a new variant, apparently. I swear they're trying it on. It's right across. It's not getting a lot of traction, but it's right across the mainstream here. They're trying it on. I kid you not, you guys. It's the exact same playbook. Now, you'd think it was totally delegitimized by all of their stupidness and the silliness. This might hurt some people's feelings, but anyone who still believes in variants of concern and variants, you got to be kidding me. People who are pushing the variant and pushing the existence of this SARS-CoV-2 virus, that quite frankly, there's no evidence at all that any such pathogen shown to be infectious in a biological setting was ever identified or found in Wuhan, China.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
You have the right to know. The right to know about culture. The right to know about the economy. The right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack, and we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
Thanks for listening and being part of the George Christensen Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're back on the George Christensen Show here on TNT Radio, talking about all things peace. And I'm joined by Susie Evans, who is with the Universal Peace Federation. We've been talking about peace in the household, talk about domestic violence, solutions to violence within the household. But I want to move on now to music for peace. It's a topic that Susie's raised. It's a project that she's engaged in. And I know, Susie, you have a belief is borne out in reality. There's certainly a lot of even scientific evidence behind it that music is much more than just about entertainment and enjoyment. Music can lift our souls. So tell us about Music for Peace.
Well, it's interesting because we see the world today, it's so conflictual. People don't trust each other. Even when we talk about peace, there's a sense of mistrust, a sense of, I don't believe you. That's taking it, you know, even from a family level to a world perspective. So how can we get people together to listen to these messages of peace? Mm. What can we do? And so it's really interesting because, you know, when you kind of start thinking about these things, something comes to you on a video or whatever. And then what happened to me was I happened to witness this beautiful video of this man singing in the Capitol the Lord's Prayer. And, you know, if you understand the Lord's Prayer, it wouldn't be something that you could narrate easily in the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. They'd kick you out in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. But because he had such a beautiful voice and the music captivated everybody, everybody stood around. And I just got the inspiration then, oh, my goodness, this is the way to help people to let down their guard, open their hearts, and be able to receive the messages of peace that are so sorely needed at the moment.
Yeah, wow.
And so that was the beginning of it. And I myself, I love music. I've played piano. I sing to a degree. And I just decided then I would like to work with Maestro David Eaton to help us to produce and direct this new vehicle of Music for Peace. And in fact, he'd written a wonderful book that I didn't know about. I'll just get it now. Hang on a second. It's called What Music Tells Me, mm-hmm. and Beauty, Truth, and Goodness in Our Cultural Inheritance. And so he is.
What was his name again, Susan? What's the fellow's name again?
David Eaton. I can introduce you to him. He's brilliant. And the book is brilliant. It talks about a lot of the issues we're facing in society, the cultural challenge that we're facing from totalitarian Marxism, et cetera, and the issues with our youth and why. So he is working with young people in orchestra, helping them to develop character and leadership skills and many other things. But he is an internationally acclaimed author, conductor, composer. And so we worked together on identifying people who could come up with a beautiful piece of music, high level. I'm not sure if you listened to what I sent you, but it was a very wholesome presentation of the different people to what they were good at in their music. And then they would talk about how music provided them with a conduit of meaning in life and how they felt that it could bring peace and happiness and joy to other people. We had included in that, I'm not sure if you've heard of David Hudson. He's an internationally acclaimed didgeridoo player that we know personally because we used to have Australian shops in America and we got music from him. And he played the didgeridoo together with an orchestra conducted by Yanni, a Greek composer in the past. Brilliant. And then we had a soprano singer internationally acclaimed. We had young people come on who talked about their perspective and how they could help bring about more understanding and more compassion through music. So it was a wonderful event, and I can send to you the link to it. It's actually, if people look it up under YouTube, it's called Under the Domestic Peace Series. There's the first one I talked about, but this one is called Music for Peace.
Right.
And so, yeah, that was the thing that motivated me most, was I saw that music and the arts, even though it had been denigrated, if you look at it since the 60s and you look at Woodstock and how this movement using music and the sexual revolution, that was the beginning, I think, of surely a breakdown in the family, because young people wanted to be free from parental you know, impingement on them. They thought they wanted to be free and they wanted to do their own thing. And that was the beginning of the breakdown of family, together with, let's say, the pill. So sexuality was then divorced from the idea of having stable, loving, committed relationships of marriage.
So you, along with this, you believe that music does have a therapeutic effect on people's health. How so? Yeah. Where do you get that from, Susan?
Well, I know it for myself. If I'm in the dungeons, I start to sing. But from the point of view, it affects the body. From beginning of recorded history, sound and music have played a significant role in healing. You know, you've got the drum rhythms of the African tribes and the sonorous chants of the Tibetan monks. And then, of course, in the churches we had, in the Catholic churches, you had music. It sort of came out of that Western culture, really. So with regard to healing, there are studies that now are in the West that show that music helps to relieve stress, anxiety, depression, it eases pain, muscle tension, lowers blood pressure. People who have things like diseases like cancer. A noted thing that my physiotherapist told me about, and I've since seen, is those people who are suffering from dementia and or from Parkinson's, their ability to talk or move is difficult. And so when you start playing the music, they start to be able to walk again. There are parts of the brain that are interconnected. The music part that stimulates the brain is also the motor control part. So that's really huge. And also children who are autistic and have other issues, they do respond to music as well. So I think music can seem to be the strongest medicine for the heart. And I mean, really, when you think about music, it stimulates brain waves that synchronize with the beat. And so if you have slower melodies and so forth, you impact what's called the parasympathetic system, which is the system that it leads you into being calmer and into a healing mode, as opposed to something with a faster beat. Yes. That would perhaps create a situation of more urgency and fight or flight.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes you would need that, but the situation in our world today is because of all the stresses, we seem to be in a constant state of fight or flight. And so we need things that will help us to get more into a relaxed and meditative state so we can figure things out of what to do, where to go.
So the popular music of today, would you say that works against the tranquil sort of peaceful existence, or what would you say?
Well, I'd say there are elements of the music. I mean, I think that's part of the demise, using arts and culture and music to create dissonance, to create division, to create problems. So there is that aspect of it, if you can discern it. But then there is the other aspect. That's why it's good to sometimes go back to the more classical music, the Bach and the Mozart and the operatic, and those are things that are being revived a bit now. And I think some of the younger people are realizing this. And even in Asia now, in Japan and Korea, they're realizing the importance of reviving classical music.
Yeah.
I'd say there are both sides to it, but we need to be able to use music and the arts to help us to become better people, with more heart and more love.
Now, the Music for Peace event, is it an actual event that you are organising or holding in Australia, or is it online? Mm. What is it, Susie?
Well, it was I think it was around the beginning of March of this year. We did a Zoom call to the participants. It was international. We've had almost 1,000 views on it. And Basically, I sent you the link to it, to watch it. And it has these participants that I talked about that are performing, and they're talking about their performance and what it means and how they feel it can bring peace to the world. So, yes, as I mentioned before, there is a link to it. If you go on YouTube, it's called the Domestic Peace Series, and under that it's Music for Peace. And then you can link into that and you can watch it. It's a very tight program. It's very enjoyable. It's not just like somebody talking and being boring, but the musical presentations are a really international standard and very captivating.
There's a new event coming up, though, I understand from what you said to me, that's going to be focusing on teaching the character and leadership skills that are necessary to navigate a successful life.
Yes.
When is that event happening, and how can people partake in it if they wish to?
Right. So what we're still planning, we're thinking around the end of September. We're still getting together the different people who will be a part of it and working out that their times are available. But the focus, yes, will be on how music and the arts can help to raise up particularly young people of character. And I just say we do need good leaders for the future. Right now I'm really worried about the leaders for the future because they're being dumbed down in the educational institutions. They're not being taught history or classics or anything about the gulags. And so we've got to find some kind of a conduit, and music, I think, is that conduit to help our young people rise above the fray of today and be able to see that working together, teamwork, being good listeners, watching the conductor, working in concert with each other, helping the person who's making the solo rise up to the front. And the unity is so important, because in our lives we can't, when we're out of tune with somebody, we may not see that so easily, but when you're out of tune and you're not really working together in an orchestra, it's very obvious. It becomes very dissonant. So I think that is the focus. We want to raise up leaders with integrity, with moral values, and to be the leaders of tomorrow and build character. And I think that's what David Eaton is doing with the young people. He's working with, he's an American, but working in Korea with the Young People's Orchestra. And I think that this is a fantastic example of how we can use music and the arts and other endeavours as well to raise up good leaders for the future.
Now, I want to move in the only few minutes that we've got left to talk, Susie, to a topic that is I'm very passionate about. Now, you're passionate about it, and it's religious freedom. I mentioned at the top of the show that you and Steve, your husband there, are involved in the Religious Freedom Alliance there in Queensland and the Institute of Faith and Culture. There is a concerted attack on the moment on freedom of faith, freedom of conscience, and freedom of speech. What work are you doing to push back against those attacks and protect religious freedom?
Right. Well, Steve and I got involved with what's called the RFA Religious Freedom Alliance back in early 21. It was started in November of 2020, but when the laws or bills were being passed down in Victoria, particularly those egregious bills about the transgender, the conversion therapy bills,
yes,
that were creating criminals out of parents or doctors, psychologists for interfering in some way with the desires of, let's say, the gender dysphoria, then they criminalized people, and still that's an issue. So it's also visiting now New South Wales. That's coming up, and that's something I'd like to talk with you in the future about what we can do to raise up the awareness. But these bills, they're impinging on our freedom. They're impinging on our freedom to have jurisdiction over our children.
They're
taking away parental rights. They're what they're doing to our children is unfathomable. To a 10-year-old child, my goodness, they're saying that they're capable of making a decision about, you know, what sex they're going to have and therefore what kind of medical procedures they're going to have that are going to maim them. So there are freedoms being taken away on so many levels.
It certainly is.
And particularly with regard to what rights we have as parents. And also, if I might remind people about what's happened in the ACT of recently, is the government's their takeover of the Calvary Catholic Hospital.
That's right. Susie, we are going to run out of time. I want people to know where to find you. Where do they go? Website, please.
Website, I think you can have my email address at this point in time. It would be susie.evans57@yahoo.com.
If you want to get in touch with Susie about the peace movement or any of these other issues, please drop her a line. Thank you very much, and we will talk again because I think we've got a lot to talk about religious freedom.